Hello and welcome to the first episode of the MoCo Beat. I'm Dana Tofig.
And I'm Tom Moore.
And this is a podcast about Montgomery County.
About the news, the politics, and the life of Montgomery County. And we're two pretty good guys to bring it to you.
Absolutely. As I said, my name is Dana Tofig. I was the Public Information Director for Montgomery County Public Schools for 6 years. I now work for the research arm of the U.S. Department of Education, but I have two kids. I live in Rockville. My kids go to Montgomery County Public Schools, and we are invested in Montgomery County for the long term.
And I grew up in Montgomery County and lived here for 18 years. I've sent one kid all the way through Montgomery County Public Schools and have five more there. I served on the Rockville City Council for 4 years, rotated off last November, and I now work as an attorney for the Federal Election Commission.
So we're going to talk about a few things that are about the future of Montgomery County. You know, what's happening now, but also what's that say about what's coming up? So we're going to talk about three important topics today. The first one is about the Rockville Pike Plan. How is Rockville Pike going to change in the future so that it supports smarter growth and it's a better place for us to live? It helps Montgomery County grow.
Second thing we're going to talk about is the Montgomery County budget that was passed preliminarily by the Montgomery County Council this week. It includes several big tax increases and a lot of money for education.
Absolutely. And then the third thing that's really important, certainly to Tom and I, we're going to talk about places where you can buy beer. Rockville Town Center recently has been kind of having a new wave of businesses open up. There's a new Irish pub. There's a couple of new restaurants that have opened up. And we are, of course, awaiting the opening of the World of Beer. But we also want to talk a little bit about how the town center, which is right in the county seat of Montgomery County, is doing. Is it surviving? And is it going to grow? How's it going to thrive?
And in the end, is the county seat of Montgomery County going to be a bar stool?
Absolutely. So if we're ready, we're going to get started right away. Let's talk about the Rockville Pike Plan. Now, this is something that Tom worked on a lot as a council member. As he said, he was on the council for 4 years. He cycled off recently, but he's continued to stay involved in the Rockville Pike Plan. I, like a lot of residents in Montgomery County, have heard of the Rockville Pike Plan, kind of know a little bit about what it's about, but I have some questions for him, and I think these are questions that other folks have. So, Tom, why don't you just give us kind of like the, you know, 15-second, 30-second overview. What's the Rockville Pike elevator speech?
The Rockville Pike Plan is one of the neighborhood plans that the city puts together periodically. They're all part of the comprehensive master plan that ties everything together. The basic idea is this is what one of the main things that the city government exists for is to plan the future. If you want to have any control of the future, you got to have a plan for it, and that's what these plans do. This one has been under development since 2007, which is kind of a lengthy gestation period for a neighborhood plan. But it's a very important plan for Rockville. It covers the distance between basically Richard Montgomery High School and the southern border of the city. And it calls for some real new features. The last time this plan was updated was in 1989, and it was lacking a lot of things that we kind of take for granted as part of modern planning now. So it's been a long time in coming, but it is we're on the last lap right now. The public comment period closes tomorrow as we're recording this, and the mayor and council are going to have a work session or two on it and then take a final vote. So it's kind of a big moment for the city of Rockville, and it's a good topic to air out.
Now, you know, you said the public comment period, by the time you're listening to us, will have closed, but and it made you think, boy, they didn't take much public comment, but really this has been a lot of public comment.
Both the Planning Commission and the Mayor and Council have held multiple public hearings since 2007. There was a planning charrette that started early on. There has been a ton of public
charrette. Very nice.
Charrette, charrette.
All right, you're learning. The MoCo Beat is a place to also learn new vocabulary words. We'll be testing that at the next podcast.
There's been a ton of public input, and I was pleased to receive a lot of it when I was on the council, and I've seen a lot of it go by since.
Absolutely. Well, let's just talk a little bit about why it's important. I think anybody who's driven on Rockville Pike or Wisconsin Avenue as you go further down into Bethesda knows that it's kind of a mess. Especially at rush hour, it's hard to get through. That area between Richard Montgomery and down like where that Barnes & Noble is on Rockville Pike, if it's 5 o'clock, you know, it's going to take you an hour to go that stretch sometimes. So How is this going to help that? What's the plan for kind of easing the congestion there?
Well, probably the very biggest new thing that this plan includes is the idea of bus rapid transit down the middle. This is a major push by Montgomery County, and they've got routes going throughout the county, all down some of the big roads. But the one that goes basically straight down 355, down Rackville Pike, from the northern end of the county all the way to Friendship Heights, is absolutely one of the main pieces of this. And it's going to take some big re-engineering of that road to make that happen. And so the plan that the Planning Commission and the Mayor and Council have been working on includes a major stretch of land in the middle to accommodate two lanes for rapid buses to just kind of shoot through the city. It's hoped that that will complement Metro and complement the ride-on bus system. And, you know, as we grow and as we get more dense over the years, that will provide just another main artery, a north-south artery in this county.
So the plan isn't just a transportation plan. I mean, it really also is, how do we want to grow, right? How do we want to grow? A lot of it looks like kind of your 1960s, 70s, 80s kind of development happened there. The strip malls and kind of those big like 2-3 story plazas there. And this would change a lot of that. It would a lot of the buildings would be fronted kind of close to the road, and there'd be big areas for people to get around, like either if it's by bike or by car. It would connect it a little bit. Talk a little bit about how it would change the way that Rockville Pike feels and looks.
Well, it's interesting. The Pike plan that is being considered right now, actually, it changes some things that have been done in the past, but it actually builds on a lot of things that were done in the past as well. You'll notice that as you're going up and down the Pike, that there are lots of disconnected service lanes, and sometimes you can drive from business to business to business along those, and sometimes it's kind of shorter stretches. The city's been collecting rights of way along those parcels for the last 40 years or so. This has been a very conscious policy of the city for that time, and the idea was to build the road wider at some point. The plan that we have in place right now from 1989 calls for 270 feet from building face to building face. So if you think about where the front door of Duck Donuts is versus the front door of the Best Buy, that's about 270 feet. And what the road right now in the middle has three lanes on either side, then a sidewalk right against the road, and then these service lanes that look different all up and down mm-hmm. the way. The new plan would basically take, you know, make good use of all of that real estate that's been reserved for all of these years, and do it in kind of a systematic way. And so if you think about it from the middle out, you'll have bus rapid transit lanes, you'll have some green space, you'll have the three major transit lanes that you have now, some green space, you'll have two service lanes along much of the Pike, and this has been pretty controversial. It's one of the things that really would make it different than it is now. Outside of that, you'll have bike lanes and then sidewalks that go right against the businesses that are there, and that's a major difference. Right now, the sidewalks are right along Rockville Pike. You take one step off the sidewalk and you are in 40 mile an hour traffic. That is a miserable way to walk. It's horribly unsafe to bike on, and that's what this plan really aims to change. One of the things that I was surprised looking at when we first hit this plan was that the 1989 plan doesn't call for bike lanes at all. And in looking back at that, just thinking, you know, 1989 wasn't that long ago. How could they have possibly not had any planning for bikes whatsoever?
I think about 1989. That's the year I graduated from high school, so it really wasn't that long ago.
It's like the blink of an eye.
Right, absolutely.
Certainly, bicycles were in circulation at that time. but this would be a boulevard. It is more of a boulevard concept. And if you think about stretches of K Street downtown, where they have something like this, where it's, you know, two much slower lanes, then a little bit of a pedestrian refuge, and then you have to cross the main part of the street if you're walking. So you're never just sprinting across the entire thing. it is shorter stretches. And It remains to be seen whether the mayor and council will keep those local lanes in or not. It's a safe bet that BRT will be included, that three fast traffic lanes will be included, that bike lanes will be included, and that wide sidewalks will be up against the businesses. Those are set. But whether these local travel lanes are included is one of the last main, unresolved questions in this plan.
And I think the plan would really, as I've read about it, take advantage of the Twin Brook Metro. Because, there's been some development happening there. It looks like there's some more happening there. And it looks like it would be kind of a central part of the plan, kind of, I guess, a little to the south end of it. But the idea that Twin Brook Metro, you could build around not just rapid transit, but also connect to Metro.
Yeah. In this plan area, there's only one metro station. It's the Twin Brook Metro Station. The Rockville Metro Station is just north of the plan area. So, there's been a fair amount of development around Twin Brook Metro, especially on the east side. And on the west side, there's plenty more coming. BF Saul Company has assembled 17 acres of land. If you think about where the hotel is, just across the street from the Twin Brook Metro, that all the way up to Party City or so, between Rockville Pike and the train tracks. They own all of that, or just about all of that now. And they've floated some pretty attractive plans to the city about basically building a second town center there. It would provide a lot of jobs, a lot of housing, a lot of new businesses. It could be a real interesting project. And they would appreciate the certainty that a new plan would bring. They've been lobbying hard for changes. They would like to get these local lanes taken out so they can build more in those in the space that they've got. We'll see how that turns out. One of the things that I tried to think about when I was doing this planning was, Rockville has lots and lots of public money has been invested in Rockville. If you think about I-270 and you think about Rockville Pike and you think about the metro system, those are three kind of amazing corridors we have shooting right through the city or right through this area. And it's our duty to take advantage of that. To have small and short buildings near the Twin Brook Metro Station or near any metro station is really a waste of the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent on this terrific infrastructure in our city. There's been a move to get greater density near metro stations, especially Twin Brook Metro. And the idea is, people are going to go, they're coming to this area. We are a nice place to be. We have good paying jobs. We've got great schools. So people are coming. And the question is, where do we want them to go? If we don't build anything, if we don't manage the growth that is coming, then they'll end up, overcrowding the residential neighborhoods we've got. You'll get two families in houses that are designed for one. You'll get, just lots of unfortunate effects within our neighborhoods. But if we take the Rockville Pike neighborhood, not many people think of it as a neighborhood, but it really is. If we take that neighborhood and decide, we're going to have a certain kind of growth here. We're going to manage our growth in a certain way. And it's basically going to be taller buildings near Metro and more density along that pike up and down it. What that does is it puts a lot of people, puts a lot of businesses, puts a lot of retail businesses and offices, close to a lot of transportation. And that will handle a lot of the growth that's coming, and it really protects the neighborhoods that are behind it. So if you live in the West End or if you live in Twin Brook, there's not going to be as much pressure to build bigger houses in your neighborhood necessarily, because a lot of the growth pressure will be handled by what's going on in the Pike. That's the hope.
Well, this show is called the MoCo Beat because both you and I were journalists, right? I was a newspaper journalist for 16 years before going into communications, and so I'm going to ask the journalist question now, which is, who doesn't like this? Why don't they like it? And are there any valid points there? That are being brought up that are going to have to be addressed if this is going to become a reality?
There's no basic disagreement on the need to have a new plan. It's details of the plan that have been hashed out over the years that people do have disagreements over. This idea of the local lanes has been controversial. I would say that it probably isn't quite as big a public controversy as it might have been, except that a developer who has a big financial stake in it has been spending a lot of money to raise a lot of public interest in it. Mm-hmm. I think people who are concerned about it are legitimately concerned about it, but their interest has been amplified by the corporate interests that are also acting there. But whether you have the local lanes or you don't have the local lanes, it's a close call. I think it's a nicer plan with the local lanes. I think it's marginally safer with the local lanes. Basically, the argument against it is it takes up a lot of real estate. If you want to have a nice project near Metro, you can't get as nice a project near Metro if they just don't have as much space to build in. And I know the concern of some of the folks on the council now is that, these might not ever get built. So why continue having them in the plan, maybe for the next 20 or 30 years, if they're never going to be built? And that's a good point, too. And there are other aspects of it. I mean, there is some controversy over, there's some disagreement over building heights near Metro. Some folks on the Planning Commission really don't want to see anywhere near as much height near Metro as we see at other Metro stations around the area. Personally, I think that's a waste of the resource. But there is a legitimate disagreement there that needs to be understood by both sides.
Well, in wrapping up, the next step is that the mayor and the council are going to have some debate about this. They're going to approve a plan. What happens after that? Like, what's the immediate, assuming that they pass it with or without lanes, maybe they'll make some adjustments. What happens next?
There's actually two things that most folks don't know about this process is, there are details in this master plan, but it doesn't really lay out, the specifics on anything. This is kind of a guide to kind of what we want it to be, what we want it to look like. And the next step for the mayor and council is to actually write the zoning code. And that is what says, like, look, this parcel's in this zone. In this zone, you can only build to this height, 270 feet, but not 271 feet or whatever. And so that's the next task of the mayor and council. What they'll do is they'll take the plan and use that as a guide to set up these parcels and write the rules for them. What's interesting about the process that's a little bit different than what's been done before is the state law changed in the middle of this process. And it used to be that this was really Planning Commission driven, and they are appointed folks. They're appointed by the mayor and council, and they write these plans. And traditionally, what the law has said was that the mayor and council could either vote it up or vote it down, but they couldn't make any changes. And there's been a change in the law that basically said, nope, the mayor and council can actually do full edits on it. So it'll be interesting to see. That's why things like as major as these local lanes is still kind of up in the air. Because the mayor and council have the pen right now, mm-hmm. and they have full editing privileges on it. They could start from scratch if they wanted to. I don't think they will, but they absolutely have the discretion to take the local lanes out if they wanted to. One common misconception is that the moment this thing passes, there are going to be bulldozers in the ground and we're going to start building local lanes tomorrow. That's not how these work. These plans go into effect, and as parcels redevelop over time, then the ideals that are in these plans get built out. So that's one of the reasons that you see service lanes in some areas but not other areas, because some parcels just haven't redeveloped since those local lanes have been called for. But if you look across the river over in Clarendon, over in Arlington, they've had a master plan in place since the 60s that is just now starting to come into play. And they're fall into place. And it's I think they probably wondered for a long time over there, why did they have all this in their plan when nothing was coming together? And then the last 10 years or so, it really has all kind of coalesced. So it's this is a long game. And if cities want to have a vision and some control over where they're going, this is the kind of plan that gets written. It's a good plan, and I'm pleased that the Planning Commission finally finished up with it, and very pleased that the Mayor and Council is going to make a move on the next couple weeks.
Excellent. And if people want to find out more information, there's a great website on the Rockville City website. You can learn about it. There's a good executive summary, which kind of summarizes it. And there's a lot of detail. So, you know, again, I think, you know, anytime people hear these things, they think the next step is, as you said, bulldozers in the ground. There's a lot of kind of not very sexy, kind of boring work that has to happen.
Absolutely.
But it's really important to make sure you've got all the codes and, you know, aligned with the plan so that you can move forward. And then there's going to be a lot of opportunity for the public to be involved in the next steps and beyond about how things get built and when they get built.
Absolutely. Yeah. The, you know, there'll be the zoning code, and there'll be a lot of back and forth on that and a lot of community input on that. And then any particular project that gets proposed is absolutely always a lot of community input on that as well.
Right. Having been a local journalist, you really haven't lived until you've sat through a zoning committee meeting. I mean, you know, it's they are, you know, you learn to appreciate the importance of what happens in planning committees and in council zoning conversations.
Yeah, it's not always the case, but you know, sometimes the drier the conversation, the larger the consequences.
That's right, absolutely. Well, we're gonna move on now talk a little bit about the budget.
Yeah, so this is an interesting year for the budget. The county executive proposed a budget that went substantially beyond the amount of revenues that would have been raised by the rate of inflation. And something that we haven't seen, I'm not sure ever, you can correct me on this one, is that there's this theory of maintenance of effort, and the budget has gone beyond maintenance of effort.
Yeah.
What is maintenance of effort, and what's happened here?
Well, maintenance of effort is, it's not quite this simple, but the bottom line of it is, in order to get your full allotment of state funding, there's a state law that says the local funding authority, in this case the county council, has got to fund education at the same per student level from one year to the next. So if you spend $5,000 or $10,000 per student one year, and the next year you have 100 more students, you have to increase the budget by $10,000 a student for those 100 students. So you have to maintain your effort in order to get your full allotment of state funding. Montgomery County has not funded the Board of Education above MOE since, I think, 2009, since fiscal year 2009. So this is going to be the fiscal year 2017 budget. And so that's you know, 7-8 years that they haven't. And in that time, Montgomery County Public Schools, the enrollment has grown significantly. And the kids who are coming are generally needing some more services. You have kids who need language services. You have, you know, more kids who are coming and living, feeling the effects of poverty in their lives. And so that requires some additional service. And, you know, MOE doesn't talk about that. It just basically says, if you pay this much per student next year, you have to pay this much per student the next year.
So the maintenance of effort thing, was this written with Montgomery County in mind? Where did this come from?
It came from, there was, and I don't know the number of years, it was several years ago, something called the Thornton Commission. And they looked at, how are we funding education? How can we increase funding to keep Maryland's really good reputation for schools? And one of the things that they talked about was this idea of maintenance of effort. That is long, the state basically said, hey, we'll add some money to the pot here. We'll be giving more money to schools. But municipalities have to do their part. They have to make sure that they are maintaining the effort that they had. So they can't, what they call, this is kind of a wonky word, but supplant, right? You can't say, oh, we're getting more money from the state, so we don't have to give quite as much. No, you have to give the same per student effort, and you'll get more state funding.
Did they have Montgomery County in mind when they wrote that?
You know, I wasn't here for the conversation. I think Montgomery County is always in mind because it's the largest county in the district. We you know, with the largest school system. It's the largest county in the state. It's the largest district in the state, and it's the fastest growing in the state. So I think Montgomery County certainly was in mind when they talked about it. The reason the council hasn't wanted to go above maintenance of effort is very simple. If they go above maintenance of effort, they have to meet that the following year. So the council has said, and this isn't 100% true, but that they're locked in, right? That if we increase per student funding this year, we're locked in next year. But, you know, there's been some recent tweaks to the MOE legislation that has made it a little easier to get a waiver. And the truth is, back in the really lean times in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, the county funded NCPS a few of those years under maintenance of effort, and the Board of Education agreed to it. I mean, they worked with them. It wasn't always, you know, lovey-dovey. It wasn't always, you know, everybody in a kumbaya moment, but eventually, you know, the Board of Education realized if they don't have the money and if people are struggling right now, we can't raise taxes, we can't do things like that. So the unions in Montgomery County Public Schools gave up their raises, and they did it willingly, which you don't always hear, and they were able to lower the maintenance of effort. And in one of the years, basically maintenance of effort got rebased. It got to a lower point. So now we're building up from that. This is the first year for FY17. They are going to go above maintenance of effort.
And it's not by a little bit. This is actually a pretty significant jump over what we've been doing in the past.
Absolutely. They are increasing the MCPS budget by about 6%. And I don't have that maintenance of effort figure right in front of me, but it's well above maintenance of effort. And so, you know, basically what the county is saying is we want to continue to invest in education. Now, the county, it was an interesting year. You know, I was at MCPS until November of this year. So the budget part had just started. And there was a lot more cooperation this year. It started kind of similarly where everybody was kind of in their corners. But I think everybody realized that there was a need for a tax increase, and that in order to get that, you were going to have to get buy-in from people who cared about the schools. And so there was this agreement that they would go above maintenance of effort. But the county council wanted that money, at least more of that money than was originally planned, to go to class size reductions, to go to efforts to narrow the achievement gap, to go to programs that were showing an impact, the achieving collegiate excellence and excellence and success ACES program with Montgomery College and Montgomery County Public Schools and the universities at Shady Grove. That's showing some impact, and so throw a little bit more money into that, expand that program. So I think there is a lot of cooperation this time. I'm sure behind the scenes, I wasn't there behind the scenes this year, it wasn't always friendly, but it was nice to see the council go above MOE, and it looks like it's really going to benefit the school system and benefit ultimately the students.
All right. The other interesting thing that they've done in order to get that extra money for the school system is they've blown past the tax caps. Mm-hmm. There's a recordation tax that's being raised, and they have pretty full discretion to do that. Mm-hmm. But to raise the property tax level beyond a certain point, there's a provision in the Montgomery County Charter that requires a unanimous 9-0 vote in order to do that. And it's called the Ficker Amendment. And mm-hmm. it's been in place since 2008. Mm-hmm. And the concern has been for quite some time that when push came to shove and the county really needed to raise extra money at a moment like that, that they wouldn't be able to get the 9 votes. But it looks like they are going to get it.
It looks like they are. It was the council unanimously did a straw vote. Basically, they do a preliminary vote, and then they have to wait a week, and then they can do the final vote. So last Thursday, from when we're recording on May 22nd, last Thursday they did the straw vote. It was unanimous, and the anticipation is, unless something changes radically next Thursday, they're going to unanimously pass this, and there will be a tax hike in that. I know, you know, people aren't generally, don't love tax hikes, but I think there's been a general understanding that there need to raise some more revenue and the schools need a little bit more help. So this really is an education first budget. That's how they're promoting it. And I think from the outside, it does look like that.
Yeah. And when I've been talking to folks about this too, it's been striking that it's not just, you know, you mentioned new students coming in who have a higher need for services, which is significant. But there are some kind of brand new expenses that the county's been shouldering, this county school systems has been shouldering, pensions mm-hmm. and a few things like that.
Well, the pension is a huge thing for the county. You know, the state several years ago decided they were going to start shifting some of the pension costs to the local municipalities, to the local counties, I should say, and that has taken effect, kind of been phased in over the last few years. One change that is probably not talked about right now a lot is that This budget coming up, the FY17 budget, I believe is the first where the investment in the pension counts towards MOE. The last few years it hasn't, but coming up it does count towards MOE. So some of the increase in MOE is really to absorb this requirement from the state that we take on more of the pension. I think states all over the country are struggling with teacher pensions. I mean, people are living longer, they're working longer, but if you're living longer, they're paying out those pensions longer, and the longer you have people in the system, you know, it creates an obligation that I think people are trying to deal with. But that is one thing that was kind of influencing the budget. You know, the last couple of years especially, the budget's been done with a little bit of, I don't want to say trickery, but there's been some shifting of funds that were, you know, there. There's a couple of funds that really aren't active anymore. They've been pulling some money out of to fund the MCPS budget, but not without going above MOE. But those opportunities are running out now. And I think the county executive signaled that he was going to propose a tax increase. He did. It was unclear if it was going to pass, but I think they kind of came to a consensus. And so just seeing the unanimous support for the budget, I mean, I don't think the budget's been passed unanimously the last few years. I don't think, or at least there's been some concern about it. But there seems to be some unity there, and that's a good thing. I mean, yeah. I think that's a good thing for the county overall.
All right. Thank you, Dana.
You bet. And I'm going to say one more thing about the budget. This is the last budget that Larry Bowers is going to be involved in. So those who don't know who Larry Bowers is, I can promise you, if you've lived in Montgomery County, you've felt the impact of his work. Larry Bowers was the chief operating officer for 16 years. For the last year and a half, he's been the interim superintendent. And so it's nice that this last budget that Larry, he was the budgeting director for a long time. This guy knows the budget better than anybody. Larry's going to retire at the end of the year. And so it's a big loss for Montgomery County Public Schools. He knows more about Montgomery County Public Schools than probably anybody out there. And so, you know, as someone who worked with Larry, as someone whose kids are still in there, I appreciate the work he's done. And I'm glad to see that this last budget is going to be something that he really wanted to see. And it will help cement what I think is a pretty good legacy, although a behind-the-scenes legacy more than he's been out front.
All right. Well, thank you, Dana.
Yep.
What's next?
Beer.
Beer.
Let's just briefly, and you know, it's really not, the news really is that Rockville Town Center seems to be undergoing a little bit of a renaissance or a change. So talk a little bit about what you've seen there. Obviously, you know what's going on in Rockville Town Center from your time on the council.
Well, Rockville Town Center has been rolling for about 10 years or so, and some of the initial tenants have come in and gone out and been replaced. One of the things that we've been seeing is a lot of the places that sell soft goods, stores, fashions, that kind of thing, have had a tougher time making it in those circumstances at Rockville Town Center. And there were a kind of a worrying number of vacancies about 2 years ago or so. But they're getting filled up. And we've got some interesting new places that have opened in the last month or two or three, and a couple that are about to open.
Right. We've had the new Irish pub, Finnegan's Wake, has opened. I'm proud that you and I were there with your lovely wife were there for the first weekend. The Mellow Mushroom just opened up, which is a big, beautiful restaurant. When I lived in Atlanta, Mellow Mushroom was all over the place. And so it's good to see that open. And then there's, Panera that's opened up, right?
Yeah.
And what else? So what's coming up?
So what's coming up is, Samovar, which is a Russian and Central Asian restaurant, that's on the corner of North Washington and Middle. I think a week from tomorrow, on May 30th, the World of Beer is opening up. You and I both commute on Metro and walk past the construction project every day, and we've been watching every little bit of progress they've made day to day. That is pretty much directly across the street from the Regal Theaters, and that'll be a nice addition. I think it'll draw a lot of people up to that area of Town Center.
Excellent. And you know, I think the question about Town Center just always comes to, you know, obviously the rents are probably very high there, and you know, it's a beautiful area and we love it. We're always in the Town Center, but you know, how sustainable is it? What works there? and what doesn't. And some of that is just, you know, you have to try different things.
Yeah, and some of it too is really what's coming next. If you think about the area just north of town center, more a little bit more toward Gaithersburg, those blocks in there, bunch of construction going in there. That's where the Pink Bank building was. That was torn down. There's now a building going up there, and there's going to be a relatively large senior housing project going up behind the newer building that was built along North Washington there, and. The idea was that town center was going to be a catalyst for development all around. So the amount of housing that's actually in town center isn't really quite enough to support the businesses that are there as they stand. But if the areas north of there get built out and the areas around redevelop a little bit more, if you're across the parking lot from the parking lot that's in front of the Regal Theater, there's going to be another building slated to go there. That'll be a lot of condominiums, a lot of apartments, you know, that's the kind of thing. I think once these projects come online, you'll have the core mass of people that can support the businesses that are in that area. So it's kind of been a long time waiting. I mean, the recession happened in the middle. A lot of projects, you know, the building where the Panera and the World of Beer is, you know, was, you know, that was approved more than 10 years ago, I think, and just is coming online now. So, you know, once the full density of Rockville Town Center comes online, I think you'll really see the businesses there thriving just because there's more people within a short walk to support those businesses.
You'll have a chance to take a look at Rockville Town Center up close on Memorial Day weekend for the hometown holidays. Also, there's a lot of events over in Rockville Town Center in the summer. It still feels a little bit like a destination place, or like a place that you drive to and park. And we're hopeful that the development that does happen puts more people living close in walking distance. You and I are walking distance from the center, but it still feels like a lot of people drive there. We'd like to see more people walking there or taking public transportation.
Absolutely. There are hardly any more metro accessible areas than that, and tons of bus lines going through and all that. But yeah, there's still a lot of parking. Hopefully when the business, you know, park buildings that are right there are all built, you will have a lot more people just coming down the elevator.
And that's it. Is there anything else we got to talk about this week?
That is everything we have for the inaugural edition of our podcast.
Yeah. Well, we are excited to launch this. It's something we've talked about for a while. And, if you have ideas, you know, you can reach out to us, through email. We have an email address now, right?
We are themocobeat@gmail.com.
Themocobeat@gmail.com. Eventually, we'll be setting up some kind of a web presence around it, hopefully, or something around it. But we hope that if you have suggestions, let us know what they are. If you have topics you'd like us to cover, we have a list of topics, but we want to hear from you as well. So if you have ideas, let us know. Thank you for tuning in.
I'm Tom Moore, and with me is Dan Tofig. Thanks very much for listening.
See you next time on The Moco Beat.